What makes a show like Antiques Roadshow so popular with viewers?
People watch the show for different reasons. We have antiques junkies, and they're going to watch that show because they know what we know, and that is you learn about great objects one at a time. We have people who just want to watch vicariously because the only professional actor on our show is Mark Wahlberg, our host. Everybody else has an everyday life. Our experts go back and work and buy and sell antiques, and our guests, of course, are everyday people. So we live vicariously through them. What do they have in their basements and attics that might be like what I own? We're hungry to learn. It's smart reality television. And then there is that little money value thing. Before Roadshow came along, who knew that there was such a thing as furniture that was six or seven figures? I didn't. So all that wrapped up into one brings us about 9 million viewers a week.
And how the market fluctuates, too, because sometimes there's certain pieces of art that just a few years ago they weren't worth much, and now everybody wants them, so the dollar value goes up.
And a really good example of how we show this is in our vintage episodes. And we were just showing episodes from 1998 and what happened to those items in today's 2013 market value. And it's really interesting and very hard to predict. And all of us who work on the show, we're trying to guess, too, when we watch for the first time as we're learning it. And you can really see the effect of it. Yes, there is some impact because time passes. But we're also just showing what's happening in the market. And it's fascinating.
Do you ever hear from people who've received appraisals on the show afterward? I always wonder, did they go out and sell it or did they keep it?
We do hear from them, but I will say this as well. I wanted to make a whole series about what people do with their things after they come to Roadshow. There wasn't enough jelly in the donut to make it. People do not sell or part with their objects, no matter what it's worth, pretty much.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I thought when I first started doing the show that, of course, if I owned those Frank Lloyd Wright drawings, I would sell them. But guess what? It wasn't my grandmother who wrote and corresponded. Of course, there are exceptions to the rules. We've done thousands of appraisals. But as a rule, no matter what it's worth, people don't sell it. There's a really good reason for that. The day you sell it, you can't afford to buy it back. Even if you sell it online, quote-unquote, fairly inexpensively, there's always a cost to sell. And a fair price for a dealer to pay you, just like all retail, is half of what he could sell it for. An auction house, and they're going to charge 20-25% for a seller's premium, unless you get something really, really great. So you won't have the money to buy it back, but most importantly, could you find it even if you had the money? And with inherited objects and everything, people want to keep that stuff in their families, so they don't sell. We're going to see, and here in Knoxville will be the same thing because this is what happens in every city. We're going to see 5,000 to 6,000 people, and they're going to bring the two most precious things they own to our show. And when I can tell you some exceptions to the stories about where people have sold things, as a rule, they were not inherited objects. They were bought things, found things. And by the way, most people are going to learn, and I'm being generous, that what they have is worth less than $500. Most of us don't own rare and great things that are worth enormous amounts of money.
With that in mind, then, why do so many people look at buying antiques and antiquing as a potential investment?
Because there are people out there who do that for a living. Yeah.
So that sentimental nature has a big connection here.
Huge. It's really about that. And frankly, I'm envious of some people. I wish my family had the foresight since the 1600s to save something and tuck stuff away, every little thing, into a little bureau. Fascinating to me that somebody would do that. How lucky is that individual to have those things? So I think they'd be nuts to sell it too.
Is there a certain item that sticks out in your mind?
I don't have favorite appraisals because I'm fickle, because I keep seeing new ones that I like, or an appraisal that I love that's one of my in my top right now. You can see it on our website. It's an Andy Warhol collection that came into El Paso. All the perfect ingredients for a producer are in that appraisal. This is a great item where the owner met Andy Warhol. And so he gives us a first-person experience of what it was like to meet Andy. It's a great object with a great story and a really delicious guest and a great appraiser.
Is that how you choose which ones get spotlighted on the show?
It's got to have some kind of story. The guest has to have something to learn. We have seen $200,000 objects where, frankly, the guest knows more than our expert. So it's not about the dollar. We collect stories. The stories are really what make the show come alive and what make us so interested.
How many shows do you tape a year?
We go to 8 cities. This is our 5th stop in our 8-city tour this summer. And we will make 3 episodes of television from every city that we go to. On top of that, we have a little bit left over from every city. Not enough to make a 4th hour, but definitely enough that if we combine some up from every city, we make what we call junk in the trunk. Knoxville, like the other cities we're in this year, will get 3+ shows because you'll also be in our junk.
What about security? I mean, you said there's only 3,000 pairs of tickets and people are excited about this event. So how do you keep people from coming in?
Well, we have both uniformed and plainclothes police at the event. If, by the way, your object is appraised for a lot of money, you will be walked out to your vehicle. We do not allow press to print your last name or tell anyone your last name. And so we are very, very careful, knowing that we've got excited people there with 2 precious things. We have a director of security who travels with us, a New York detective, now retired, and he hires those police. So we're watching. Even you don't know, we're watching.
Is Lark Mason going to be here?
You betcha he is. And he went to school around here.
He went to school here.
And by the way, for all the college students out there, he's one of the country's top Asian arts experts.
He has appraised the top ticket item that you guys have ever appraised? Is that right?
He was the one who did the appraisal on the rhinoceros horn cups that came to Roadshow, which to date holds the record for the highest value on something we've appraised. Interestingly enough, we talked about moving market earlier. If those were appraised today, would appraise quite differently. Not nearly for that kind of value.
What were they appraised at then?
$1 million to $1.5 million for 5 rhinoceros horn cups. But the laws have changed about how those can be sold, and they would appraise for much less today. We, by the way, have U.S. Fish and Wildlife visit Roadshow once a season to help us understand it better. It's complicated, and this is one of the cities where they're coming to our Friday meeting with the experts to go over the ever-changing, can't-keep-up-with-it laws so that we teach our audience the right information.